I've got the look that drives the girls wild. I've got the move that really move them. I said chill up and down their spine. I'm just a sexy boy.
North-South Connection Podcast Network. My goodness, here we are again for episode 21 of The Year That Was, where I am ranking every single WWF, WWE pay-per-view year of all time. Did you like my Michael Cole W? Here we are, the 16th best pay-per-view of all time. Episode 21, I can't believe it. This project started 3 years ago when I watched every pay-per-view, but the project itself for the podcast started 42 weeks ago, which is crazy. We were in the midst of the pandemic. We're still in the midst of the pandemic, but here we are. 16th best pay-per-view year of all time is 1996, and there's a lot to go on for this year, so let's just jump right into it. 96 is an interesting year for me. I was 16 at the time, and I spent about a year away from the product. I still followed-ish, but I wasn't really invested. That's how bad a year 1995 was. See, I have two dark eras for wrestling. 1995, and I'd say 2008 to 2011. Besides that, I've been a lifelong fan ever since I got on board in 1987. So the point is, in 96, the beginning, I was away. Then I saw a Pro Wrestling Illustrated on the shelf with the Giant of all people on it. And I don't know why I wanted it. I think it's because I was taking the train to Nova Scotia to visit my mom, and I just wanted something to read. But I read it cover to cover, and I was so intrigued about what was going on. Shawn Michaels as champion, Vader, Mankind, Steve Austin. As a consequence, I checked out SummerSlam, and Sid screamed at me, and I was hooked all over again. So in a way, I'm a little shocked this isn't higher on the list, but I think it becomes clear by looking closely at the criteria I have. So for those who've been following, I have 12 criteria with which I rank these years. And three of them are, I rank the WrestleManias, I rank the Royal Rumble matches, and I rank the SummerSlams. And that's the only time you should say the SummerSlam in real English. And then there's an aggregate on the 12 scores. So if you do poorly at WrestleMania, the Royal Rumble, and the SummerSlam, then you end up being a bit further back on the year list. Now this, I mean, look, there's 36 years we're looking at. So being 16th is like above average. So it's good. But I'm surprised it's not higher based on how important a year it is. I got a lot of comments for this year, which I really appreciate. If you want to participate in the show, please hit us up at The Place to Be group on Facebook. Right, I'll talk about everything you guys write. I'll answer any questions you guys have. Or hit me up on Twitter at Aaron D. George. You can write me there. Find me on Facebook. The interaction is a really big part of the show, and I really like it. Jeffrey Thomas, I was out after WrestleMania 12 and didn't come back until 2004. I got nothing but love for the you that was. I got nothing but love for you, Jeffrey. I think it's a I put this first because it's really interesting. Because I think 95 into 96 did end up pushing a lot of people out. Now, I would imagine life does that too. I mean, I was surprised. Maybe it was because I was 15 and I was interested in girls or whatever. I didn't get girls, but I was interested in them. And it's a shame for me because WrestleMania 12, I would say after WrestleMania 12 to 2004 is probably my second favorite era of all time. I mean, not 2003, but you get the idea. Like, there's some really good meat in there. So I'd be interested if you ever go back and watch it, what your thoughts are, Jeffrey. And what was it that drove you away? Rory McNamara. Ah, the year I started watching wrestling. I was slowly hooked in by the commercials for the Iron Man match at WrestleMania 12. And then from there, here I am 25 years later. The 13-year-old me did think that Shawn Michaels was Bret Hart and Bret Hart was Shawn Michaels. I bet they'd love that. Yeah, they would loathe that, but that's funny. You know, it's funny. I have a similar story. When I first saw The Rockers, I could not figure out who was Shawn Michaels and who was Marty Jannetty. That dates my viewing a bit further back. But I find it interesting that you were intrigued by Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. Not because they're not good, because obviously they're two of the greatest of all time, but they're not really the kind of big, over-the-top characters that tend to drive business and really latch people in. So I think that's kind of fascinating. Let's get to some through lines for 1996. Number one, they probably can't ask any more of Shawn Michaels in 1996. He does a lot of things really well, which we'll talk about. I think, too, there's a great transition happening here. I think it's also important to notice that one man's trash is another's treasure that gets turned into a billion-dollar company. And finally, what's interesting with 96 is every division matters. I'm going to throw it right away to my partner, JT Rosero, who I do No Holds Barred with, who I do, No Holds Barred runs every second Saturday. And with our new podcast that's running in conjunction with this podcast on Mondays, which is now entering the Royal Rumble, where we're going through the Royal Rumble participants. So if you like the kind of any kind of weird shit I do here, please check out the Royal Rumble podcast. We're breaking down starting in 1988. We're talking about Bret Hart because he's the first entry. And we're going to analyze every single person who's been in the Rumble's Rumble performances. It's a really nerdy project, but I think it's a lot of fun. Here's JT. He says, 96 is awesome. It's a fun year of transitions, tons of change, but also feels stuck in the old ways. It takes them time to realize what is holding them back, but you can see the streaks of excitement, creativity, and freshness seeping through. It really cleanses the 93-95 run and refreshes the roster and lays the foundation for the resurgence. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Justin Pratt. I put up a picture on the Place to Be site, group. Justin Pratt says, the picture of Sid just hit me in the feels. 96 is such a hectic masterpiece. You have Bret rising and falling and rising again. Sounds like me. You have Shawn running with the ball for the first time. And you have a great mix of guys like Mankind, Austin, Miro, and Vader rising to prominence. For nostalgia purposes, it may be my favorite year ever. Thanks. I'll hang up and listen. Justin's the man. By the way, if you like Justin, if you like anything he says here, on Wednesdays, New Gen on a Mission, where Justin and Tim Sloka are going through the New Generation era. They're focusing on that. They're starting, I want to say it's, well, the only episode I've heard so far is their intro, which was great because they talked about their likes, their dislikes, who their favorite wrestlers were from the era and such. But I believe they're starting at Survivor Series 92 and going to Survivor Series 97. So they're really focusing on that era. That runs on Wednesdays on the North-South Connection Podcast Network. My man Rocco Martone. I was checked out of WWF in 96, so I've only seen the big shows and moments till this year was announced for the podcast. Wow, I'm glad I'm influencing you to watch some stuff. It's cool. Going chronologically through the shows over the past weeks was great, and I really enjoyed the experience of how much of a throw shit against the wall and see what sticks year this was. The company just seems so wide open, with the acknowledgement of the world outside WWF being a very cool aspect. Name dropping the USWA and All Japan in the Rumble, and the ECW Invasion being some examples. Man, I didn't even take any notes on the ECW Invasion, just because there's so much going on. There were so many wild stipulation matches, interesting matchups and feuds, plus all the old vets and new faces popping up. I can really see why this is considered a transition year. The year starts with old fart Dory Funk in the Rumble, and by the end of the year, the biggest stars in the next few years have been debuted. This year's Mania gave us Triple H's Mania debut and a 1 minute and 30 seconds, which is the ideal amount for any Triple H match, not against Daniel Bryan. Thank you. Shawn Michaels seemed to me the most unlikable babyface champ of all time until Seth Rollins came along. Yep. The highlight was finally seeing this Sid run in its entirety, and now getting to experience what an amazing aura this dude had. It really shows how much more important it is to connect with the audience compared to just being able to string moves together. And in brackets, once again, Seth Rollins, I'm looking at your general direction. I couldn't agree more with that comment, Rocco. I was talking to somebody on Twitter the other day, and we were talking about why there isn't a boom period. And I just don't think they have any characters that connect with the audience. I mean, look, we can use Sid as an example, but there's tons of them throughout time. The worst thing about this, back to Rocco, the worst thing about this year was the JR Heel commentary. That was definitely the genesis for the Michael Cole bullshit in 2009-2010 that made me tune out of WWE and forced Jerry Lawler's heart to explode just to end the angle. I really dug the In Your House pay-per-view titles this year, with Best Friends, Better Enemies really standing out. Definitely inspired by As You Like It's line, most friendship is fading, most loving is folly. Man, a Shakespeare reference? I can't tell you how much more I love you now. Why haven't the WWF stolen more plot lines from classic art? Yeah, like, you know, they could probably, I will say that I think the Roman Reigns stuff now kind of has a Macbethian feel of like the guy who wants to be in charge and then gets super paranoid in charge. And I mean, we'll see if he kills a bunch of people, but yeah. Most importantly, Aaron, based on Better Enemies motif, who holds the biggest grudge against you on this planet? And why do you deserve that person's hatred? And how upset do you get when you tell people about it and they side with the person you wronged? So I'm going to say something that might be a bit naive. I don't know. I mean, look, I'm sure there's people that hate me. I know I don't get along with everybody. But I work in the arts field, in acting, and it's the fakest fucking world you can imagine. So, you know, I don't know if people hate who hates me or not. I'm sure there are people that do. I'm pretty opinionated with stuff. But I'll tell you this story that always drove me crazy and still bothers me to this day. So I was dating this girl. And at the time, I was living with my ex, which is never a good idea. Don't do that. It was a lease thing. Anyway, I was with my ex, and I'm dating this girl. And this girl was great, and I really liked her. And there was there was a future there. And my ex wrote her, wrote her kind of by accident, as though she was writing a friend, telling her that her and I were back together and they were taking a trip together. And so this new girl, who I was totally in love with at the time, thought that I was just lying to her. And she freaked out. And I've never actually had the chance to, like, reconcile that with her. This was 2006. So maybe that's why I hate that year so much. No. I would say that's probably a person that probably hates me. And, you know, I'm sure I made some mistakes in that relationship and whatnot. But I always wish that that's something that could just be cleared up, because it was a horrible, horrible misunderstanding. Let's get back to wrestling. By the way, any questions you guys want to ask me, I will answer. I really appreciate, Rocco, your questions. I find they take me in weird directions. I'm sorry if this one didn't live up to anything funny or anything. Just a sad tale. So one of the categories we rank these years on is matches. This is 24th out of 36 with a 2.77 average star rating match. I have 44% of the matches being at least good, 56 boring to bad. The bad ratio here actually puts it on a pretty crappy end of the stick here, because normally it's not, nothing's that high. And I have a whopping 19% of the matches are downright bad. I think The Undertaker and Bret Hart really do some damage here. A third of the bad matches involve one or both of those guys. Vader doesn't help too, which is crazy because I love Vader. But then again, Vader's thrown in there with noted old man / alcoholic Jake Roberts, a near-death Yokozuna, and an unmotivated Razor. And while there's not exactly a ton of great matches throughout the year, there's a handful that are on the verge of greatness. And I'd like to mention Bulldog and Michaels from King of the Ring, Michaels and Owen Hart. Those are the ones that come to mind. Before this project, though, I'd never seen Michaels and Owen Hart, and I'll admit I was a little disappointed. Another sneaky, really good match is Austin and Miro from the King of the Ring. Let's talk about the worst match of the year. And look, imagine this. This is a year where Jose Lothario fought Jim Cornette on pay-per-view, and that's not the worst match. There's two worst matches. So as I've been doing lately, I rewatched the worst match of the year for the podcast, and that match is Goldust versus The Ultimate Warrior from Good Friends, Better Enemies. And here we go. Right from the start, Vince is like, "You want to get bizarre?" And Vince also says Warrior is the most reckless individual in the history of the World Wrestling Federation. Does that mean he's hurting people? In the pre-show, Marlena blew smoke in his face. She clearly never saw his anti-smoking PSA from the 1980s. Warrior comes out. Gets a crazy pop. Vince is like, "Get set!" Warrior looks great. Goldust screams at him from the outside. And does Warrior have a tattoo of himself on his arm? It looks like him. Goldust has a bodyguard and Marlene out there. The bodyguard is Bruiser Mastino or Mantar. Right off the start, something's up because Warrior has not removed his cloak and Goldust is stalling. As they run away, Marlena drops the cigar and the Warrior smokes it. I guess he clearly never saw his own anti-smoking PSA in the 80s. And is this the evidence that it's a different guy? He's picked up cigar smoking? And I love that Vince goes out of his way to be like, you know, to my knowledge, the Ultimate Warrior does not smoke. Warrior picks up Marlena's chair. He puts it in the ring. Warrior puffs on the chair like with his mouth. And this just delights Vince. You'll notice there's no wrestling yet. Warrior smokes and dresses up like Goldust. And Vince is like, "Who's playing the mind games now?" And Goldust screams at one point, "No! That's too much!" Vince wants the ref to get it under control. The crowd, of course, is very dated. Starts chanting some anti-gay slurs at Goldust. Warrior's just sitting and smoking. Goldust gets the mic and he goes, "You." if you people don't shut your mouth right now, I'm going to personally come out there and kiss every one of you. And then Lawler compares Warrior to Don Juan DeMarco, which is a two-year-old movie at this point. Goldust finally gets in the ring. Warrior offers to dress up Goldust. He gives the cigar back to Marlena, who immediately smokes it. I guess she's not worried about herpes. He puts the robe on Goldust. Now they're both wearing robes. They're standing in the ring doing nothing, wearing robes. Goldust allows, Warrior allows Goldust to sit. Marlena and Warrior are now sharing the cigar back and forth. Warrior looks like an experienced cigar smoker, by the way. Goldust asks for his hand to be kissed, and Warrior burns it with a cigar. Then he pumps his arms like a psychopath and clotheslines him out of the chair. Goldust flees, and now gets counted out. Now the bodyguard attacks. Warrior still hasn't removed the robe. Mastino bumps nicely for him, but then Warrior just starts stripping him and taking his clothes off. The whole match is Warrior getting people in and out of clothing. Then he takes Mastino's hat and puts it on. I would have never imagined how much the Ultimate Warrior loved costumes and pantomimes. He picks up the wig. Vince is like, what's he going to do with that? It's a wig, you fucking moron. What else? What do you think he's going to do with it? He's not going to put it on his dick and call it a merkin. And then Vince yells about how entertaining this is. Look, why didn't he just squash the bodyguard and then Goldust could have thrown a couple other guys out? I don't even know if this counts as a match, but it's just so fucking stupid. What they ended up doing was just so dumb. Maybe it's not a worse match. I have it at 0 stars. Maybe I should have been an NA, but it's at 0. Maybe the worst match is Bret and Undertaker from the Rumble. Maybe I need to rethink everything in my whole life. Let's do the top 5 matches. Now, normally I do honorable mentions, but there's no honorable mentions because nothing else cracked 4 stars. Number 5, Shawn Michaels versus Vader from the SummerSlam for the WWF Championship. I have it 4. And it could have been even better. Sure, there's all these shenanigans with the restarts and such, but it's a pretty fun brawl. Shawn bumps great for Vader. It's no Sting Vader, but it's a great testament to how strong both guys are as characters and as workers. Number 4, Shawn Michaels versus Sid from the Survivor Series from the WWF Championship. Again, I have it at 4. Hands down, Sid's best match, and hands down, Shawn's like 25th best match. The atmosphere is amazing. Despite all that Shawn did the previous year, he was booed mercilessly next to the uber-cool Sid. Legit great stuff from both guys. All-time moment, and I'm such a Sid mark that, I mean, how could this not make the list? Number 3, Shawn Michaels versus, the theme happening here, Shawn Michaels versus Diesel, good friends, better enemies for the WWF Championship No Holds Barred match. I would go 4.5. I think it's the third Shawn Michaels match in the top 5. This is a war. Diesel's best match ever. They use a guy's leg. It feels personal. This is the kind of thing I want in professional wrestling. A fucking fight. Second best match of the year. Bret Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin, Survivor Series, 4.5 stars. Of all the matches I watched or rewatched for this project, this was far and away the match I was most disappointed in. And I have it at 4.5 stars and the second best match of the year. And I think it's because I will always unfairly compare it to the Mania 13 match, which is different in every way. But look, it's comparing my second best match of all time to my 114th, which really isn't fair. But then again, no one was ever fair to Flair either. This match is great. It's, I think, maybe the last great pure wrestling match Steve Austin ever had, and maybe the really last great wrestling match before the great, I mean, when I say wrestling, I mean like grappling match before the great turnover style in 97-98. My one ding is that I don't like that Bret uses the same finish as the Roddy Piper WrestleMania 8 match, but it's a minor bitch. These two had great chemistry, and they never had anything close to a bad outing. This match put Bret right back in the title hunt, solidified Austin as a guy who can go. Also, the fact that Bret's gear had orange trim next to the pink is a fucking crime. And no one has paid an adequate price for this crime yet. And if you think about his post-Survivor Series, like 1996, and what his life becomes, understand that despite his difficulties, nothing can forgive this fucking... You don't put orange next to pink. The number one match of the year from WrestleMania 12. You know which one I'm going with. The Ultimate Warrior versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley. I mean, look. He fucking destroys him. He kicks the shit out of him. He no-sells his finish. He puts the fucking knees in his chest and puts his arms in the air. Oh, it's the fucking best. Seriously, number one match of the year. Not from WrestleMania. Not from WrestleMania 12. From Mind Games, Shawn Michaels versus Mankind. 4 3/4 stars. Four of the top five matches belong to Shawn Michaels this year. I think it's a pretty good year. But he saved his best for Mind Games against Mankind. Such a fantastic styles clash for me that worked on every level. It's pretty criminal that these two never really got a chance to go out again and tear it down. And it's every bit as much of a war that as the match with Diesel, but this one added kind of speed to the mix. They're both so fast. Mankind is so fast. And they did just enough to make me think they might pull the trigger on Foley. My one complaint, I think, is the finish. And that's actually why I don't have it at five. And it's not because it's a DQ finish. I can live with a good DQ, but it's a lazy DQ. Vader and Undertaker running in was lame. Have Foley go too far, get DQ'd. Have Michaels get DQ'd. Throw them both out. But just running in guys, to me, made it feel less special and made it feel like they didn't have any real thought behind it. But speaking of thought, this match made me think a lot about how much we missed out with Mick Foley in the WWF. And it's not that he didn't have a great career. A few years ago, when the Place to Be Nation did the ranking of the greatest WWE wrestlers of all time, we had like 112 ballots, something like that. I had Mick at 11th. But I remember when I did my first list, I'd completely forgotten him. Like, I was like, oh my God, like, it was such a stupid, what a goof. I then started him at 100 and pitted him against every guy. And he worked his way all the way up to 11. And it's really a terrible oversight. But he's just a weird guy who you don't think about when you think of greatest of all time. But he is. He does it all. And with so many, and he still has so many dream matches left on the table. There's no rematch with Shawn. There's no match or series of matches with Bret Hart. No big WWF match against Vader. No big time stuff with Owen. No long term stuff with Bulldog. Man, there's so much on the table. And you think about his career, it could have been even better, which is crazy. Let's talk about characters. If you want to talk about characters, check out Second Print Comics, North-South Connection Podcast Network on Sundays. Mark Claire and Remzo Martinez breaking down all your comics needs. They're a great, really fun listen. And if you want to follow the comics motif, go on Fridays to the North-South Connection Podcast Network for Shrink Drapped with Jenny Smith, Sean Kidd, and Tim Capel as they go through the psychology of superheroes. And that runs alternatively with Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. And the gang always gets its Always Sunny podcast, which is myself, JT, and Josh Richard talking about It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Characters in 1996. I have it 7th out of 36. And I think the worst, this goes back to something Rocco was talking about. The worst character of the year may be Shawn Michaels. And I don't mean that as a slight to Shawn. I just think they did with him what they did with every WWE face champion during this era. They stripped him of his edge and made him kind of this wisecracking, detestable babyface. They decided to make him another Diesel, despite the fact that Diesel kind of bombed as a face that people care about. Now, luckily, Shawn brought it in the ring every time and had killer matches almost every time out. The problem is that in this era, it feels like they're going for realism, but people don't act this way. People aren't just unfazed by shit when it happens. Well, you know, he's my best friend, turned on me, he fucked my wife, but you know, I'll tell you what, Vince, it is what it is. People aren't like that. We want people that react in real ways. It's a complete misunderstanding, too, of what cool is. You can't force cool. Razor Ramon was cool, and that's because Scott Hall was cool. Shawn Michaels popping jokes while Vince is like, ha ha! It just doesn't work. And look, I know that Hulk Hogan wasn't a real person. He didn't behave like a real person. But he was orange, and those vitamins would have killed anyone. But at that time, they weren't going for realism, as opposed to now they are. Now, by contrast, as soon as Diesel gets pinned by Bret Hart and scream motherfucker into the camera, we got the character that could have carried the promotion for 1995. He's in 96, he's just a giant cocky bully who could give two shits what you thought about him. It worked so well that they were able to create a stable out of his personality, and it became one of the most important factions of all time in another company. Razor Ramon was also present for a few months. I use the word present in the loosest possible terms. So Hall and Nash leave for the greener pastures of WCW, so we need people to pick up the slack. And I don't think there's anybody at the time that knew that the guys who would do this, the WCW rejects who would do this, would eventually stick it to their company and put them out of business. The crazy thing is, it wasn't even from the guys that you would have expected right away. So it seems to me the first guy they wanted to make a really big deal out of was the wild man, Mark Morrow. From the time he smashed Hunter Hearst Helmsley into that garage door, I thought he was destined for greatness. He was ripped. He could run his hands over his eyes in that Adam West Batman dance move. And have you seen his eyes? Wild. Then there was the man they call Vader. He showed up. Vader's great, and I thought we were looking at like the second coming of Yokozuna, but like a better version as like the giant heel that was running the promotion. Didn't quite materialize that way, but I think he's good in 96, despite having some not great matches. He's still a really fun character. And when I'm trying to figure out who of these WCW guys that they pushed is going to like really stick it to WCW. It wasn't even Goldust who had a crazy push. He debuted in late 95, but this man produced the most awful matches, but holy shit, was he a compelling character. I won a bet in high school with my friend that Goldust would win the IC belt at the Rumble, and he did. Yeah, it was weird that I made that bet in the shower after gym class when we both had our penises hanging out, but it felt apropos considering who we were talking about. Goldust rubbed his chest, he sexually assaulted Razor Ramon, he was beaten to a bloody pulp by Roddy Piper, and his reign ended when he assaulted Ahmed Johnson. You'd think all the sexual assault would eventually catch up with him. By the end of the year, we're cheering this pervert. So, he was over. Also, speaking of perverts, the British Bulldog wants you to know Shawn Michaels is a pervert. My British accent needs some work. Owen Hart was apparently a murderer for some reason now. He's just trying to murder Shawn Michaels for the year. Leif Cassidy is stuck in the 70s. Savio Vega is a Caribbean legend. Jake the Snake is a hypocrite of the highest order. And I never felt right with him carrying around a yellow snake. The problem I have is that that's what I imagine his alcohol-fueled dick looks like. I mean, I'm sure it's not as big, but who knows with Jake. Honestly, it's a miracle that he's still alive, and it's not so far a stretch that maybe he's like tucked his monster cock around his body and hit it with that preposterous vest. Ultimate Warrior is still running. Only this time he was promoting higher education. He was also screaming about kicking ass, which was new for the Warrior. It was a new Warrior who spoke his mind. I'm sure at this point, none of us knew where speaking his mind would eventually lead. But for now, it was intense and different. Flash Funk was a pimp, I think. He loved to dance. I don't know how he wrestled in those boots. The Godwins were the dumbest fucking hog farmers in the world. The Body Donnas were the dumbest fucking personal trainers in the world. And the Smoking Guns were the dumbest cowboys in the world. Also, Sunny was the hottest woman in the world. The Undertaker was made to look human. Which was a turn that we desperately needed if the character was going to survive. I'm legit curious how much longer they could have maintained the character if Mankind doesn't show up and force that change. Speaking of Mankind, so he was a concert piano prodigy who was rejected by his parents, was forced to live in the sewers with rats. Who cares? He screams, he pulls out his hair, he's scary, and then he beats The Undertaker? Man, just an amazing, fresh take on a wild man character. Imagine having this guy on the roster and then naming the guy who looks like Little Richard the Wild Man. Duke Josie's a trash man. Farouk is the Baby Boo Gladiator for some reason. And look, the guy who's eventually going to, the WCW reject, we know who it is. It's Steve Austin. I mean, what do I need to say? Okay, I'm not going to go on and on about Steve. The promo was transcendent, and he crafted the anti-hero character perfectly in 96, and it would take over the business in 97. He's just incredible. Imagine firing this guy.
You don't keep Ahmed Johnson tell you about WWK Farouk. You're going down. Half cheek in, hair tight, tights in pants, up ass, be world champ. Yeah.
But my favorite character, and I think you know who this is of course Psycho Sid. I mean, man. Look. This new take on the character, where he's hearing voices and screaming about being the man and the master of the world, man, it just clicked on me for every level. And at 16, it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen. Now, I'm much more entertained by his 1992 run now, but at the time, no one could touch him. His music was awesome. He looked like he would kill you. He probably would kill you with a pair of scissors. But he became the psychopath on TV that we all knew what he was behind the scenes. Imagine this monster after a softball loss. Man, I wouldn't want to be in that dugout. Imagine how many eggs he must eat in the morning. We're talking like a Gaston level of eggs. 1996, Sid was the man, and I'm glad Rocco brought up his aura. He felt so special. He looked like a million bucks. I don't give a shit that he couldn't wrestle. And he wasn't even as bad as people make him out to be. He's okay. I mean, he's not good, but he was capable of having a decent match. I think his 95 is garbage, but man, Sid's awesome here. Oh, love me some Sid. And I'll be also be honest, I thought that Mark, I mentioned Shawn Michaels earlier, but I think that smiling Mark Henry is probably the worst character of the year. But we at the North-South Connection have no problem with Mark Henry in any way. WrestleMania, 24th out of 36. There's not a shred of anything bad on this WrestleMania, so why on earth is it 24th? Well, because there's nothing really that truly transcends a normal show and makes it feel like a WrestleMania. So while you're never going to see it near the bottom being driven into the ground by Undertaker versus Shane McMahon and a Stephanie McMahon promo at 11:45 at night, it's kind of lacking the punch of a great match to move it up the list. Now, if this one had something like the caliber of the Austin Hart match from 97, it would shoot right up and challenge for top 10. It's less of a consequence of the show being bad, per se. Instead, it's a testament to how special WrestleMania can be. That's why a WrestleMania like 13 comes in just ahead of it on the list. I think the opener is a fun match with Vader staking his claims, the new monster of the promotion, while Jake staked his claim to the worst vest in the promotion. I just fucking hate that vest. I mean, I get it. He's fat, he's heavier, but fuck it. Just let the gut loose. We know you're fat. We like you anyway. We like fat guys. It's wrestling, right? We've cheered for large people forever. Just take it off, okay? Take it off. Piper commits a hate crime on Goldust. Those punches, man, were just real. And that goddamn fire hose must have hurt. Yeah, they're too late on the OJ stuff, but, you know, that's actually really good for them. Austin and Vegas, fine. Just a solid match, interrupted by a phone call of lunacy. My favorite match of all time is next with Warrior and Triple H. I think my favorite part of that match isn't even the match. I mean, I love the whole idea behind it. Don't get me wrong. But I love that the crowd is waiting and Hunter's music plays, and that gets a pop. And it's not a pop for Hunter. It's because they know what's about to happen. My actual match of the night is next with The Undertaker fighting Diesel to a very respectable 3.5 stars. I had this as my 7th best match of the year. And it's really a minor miracle they delivered to this level. Taker's Mania resume was kind of spotty at best and disastrous at worst. And Diesel had an awful run against the big men the year before. But this was really good. And a nice little peek into the future of The Undertaker at Mania. Now the main event. Of Shawn Michaels' 7 title matches in 1996, I have this as the 6th best, so 2nd worst. But it's just I have one spot ahead of the Beware of Dog match with the Bulldog. And I don't hate the match. I have it at 3.25 stars. I'm not of the mind that it's either the greatest match of all time or garbage. I think you can be fair and put it in the middle. So for me, almost very good. This was a match that was been dissected ad nauseum. Probably my favorite dissection being on the Wrestling Warzone with JT and Chad. Runs every Thursday on North-South Connection Podcast Network, in tandem with ECW Three-Way Dance with Jenny Smith, John D'Amato, and JT. Check it out, North-South Connection Podcast Network. But they broke it down really well and spent a lot of time on it. They're a bit higher on the match than I am, but I think they did a great job of highlighting the positives, so I'm not going to rehash that. My biggest problem with the match, besides the length, is that Shawn does a really solid job of adapting his style to work with Bret and does a ton of work on Bret's arm, but Bret no-sells it as the match goes on. And I agree with those who have said that it probably shouldn't have been an Iron Man match. Again, it's in no way bad. I just don't want to watch it again. And they're so good. It's weird that guys that good who have such great matches as everybody else, for me, never raise their match to get that. They just don't have the chemistry that they have with other guys for whatever reason. World title storyline, 17th out of 36. So on one hand, Michael's run is all-time good in the ring. But it's not exactly the most exciting run. Couple that with Bret kind of dreadfully at the beginning of the year having the belt, and it's not really the most compelling WWF World title scene picture. That being said, I will say Michael's run did make the title feel important, as most long runs like this do. They make a good effort to establish number one contenders too. It's not just thrown together. And this is really the last year before the belt starts jumping around a whole lot. So there's 3 title changes in 96, which is a far cry from like the 12 in 99. And when Sid wins in November, it feels special. It feels like the company is like being run by the fans, which is nice. James Gruenberg clicks in. I guess you can click in. He says, if I look back on it now, Sid seems like a better choice than Vader to beat Shawn Michaels. Has nothing to do with SummerSlam 96. It's a hard one. Because like, I mean, look, I'm happy it happened, but I wonder if Vader would have been better. And it has everything to do with SummerSlam 96. Love you, James. Mid-card storyline, 13th out of 36. As much as the world title scene was the last before the changeover to multiple title changes per year and like devaluing the championship, this to me feels like one of the last years where the Intercontinental Championship is treated as a focal point of the promotion. As much as Goldust is a bit of a poison in the ring, he still feels like a huge deal, and his title defenses feel like events. He fights The Undertaker, he fights The Ultimate Warrior, for Christ's sake. Like, and it doesn't get any bigger in the 1996 WWF than that. You could even make the argument that he was fighting the main eventers while Shawn, a guy lower on the card than, say, Taker and Warrior, was in the main events. I know, like, we all like to laugh at poor Moa Dib Johnson, but it's hard to argue how much of a big deal he felt with, like, within 96. When he tried to save that man's life on that gurney, he crossed a fucking line. I think Ahmed would have rather died than have Goldust lips take his. I think he would have rather gone to heaven and axe kicked Jesus into oblivion. Instead, he went on to crush Goldust. And I think if not for his injury, I don't know how high his ceiling is. Then they do a tournament and like the really hot prospect Mark Morrow wins it. Mr. Perfect might be coming back to help Hunter Hearst Helmsley. It just felt like a happening division. A far cry from, say, 2020 when the U.S. title makes like 2 pay-per-views out of 100. Tag team storyline. I had a 12th out of 36. Again, what? And I'm going to have to explain this one, I'm sure. I think it's because they're trying hard. And say what you will about the Godwins, the Bodydonis, the Guns, the New Rockers, but it's far and away the most focus they've put into division since 1992. Yes, they're not the focus. It's Sunny for most of the year. But she's like one of the biggest stars in the promotion, and they're trying to fill the division with actual teams. I'd rather a slightly less stellar tag division with actual teams that are focused on than almost any iteration between like 2004 and 2007. Now, later in the year, we do get 2 guys put together. But since they're one among many teams, it works. Davey and Owen are an amazing team and filled the credibility hole that the division was lacking for most of the year. By the end of the year, we also had Furnace and LaFon. I think they're excellent. A tag division feels important, even though it's not producing the best matches. I think I'd be remiss, too, if I didn't speak on Razor Ramon and Diesel here. I mean, Razor Ramon in quotation marks and Diesel in quotation marks. Suffice, if I understand this correctly, the only reason they were put on TV was to show that they're still using the characters for their stupid lawsuit, right? And I was so brainwashed at the time that I really truly believed the WWF narrative that WCW was the big bully taking all their stars. What a bunch of babies this company is. And this company would never, ever stoop to presenting a new wrestler as anything resembling their old gimmick, right? It's not like guys like Junkyard Dog or Jim Duggan weren't those characters when they were poached from another company. Or Hulk Hogan, even, for that matter. Or Bobby Heenan. Or 75% of the stars they had in the 80s and 90s. Here I am reaching into the past to find examples. But, like, it's not like during this time they don't have fucking Vader on the roster right now doing the same character he's doing in WCW. Oh, no, wait. He's called the man they call Vader now. I suppose that's different enough to satisfy the cognitive dissonance of Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Or what about the aristocrat Jean-Paul Levesque, who goes from a French snob to an American snob? See, guys? It's different. They can't promote Scott Hall as a cool guy on TV. It's too close to what we're doing. And look, we have the character. What a joke, man. No wonder they're so petty with other companies to this day. For all the talk of Vince being a fighter and this big tough guy who likes to push back and fight, you know, and all this talk of things that are good for the goose being good for a gander, poor Vinnie Mac really just can't handle anyone competing with him psychologically. It's like it's a shame he's not stronger mentally, because it's actually when he's at his creative best. And if Razor and Diesel wasn't a lawsuit thing, if they thought this was a good idea, if Vince thought, ha ha, they'll love these guys, they're just as charismatic as Hall and Nash, then he's further off his rocker in 96 than we ever thought he could be possible. Also, it's insane to me that Marty Jannetty is the Marty Jannetty of 2 different teams. Nothing going on in the women's storyline, so I just gave the median, which is 15-16. Royal Rumble match, 19th out of 36. Now, were you guys as shocked as I was that they gave Omari the Orient Express music? Also, you'd think that by 96, the heat would be gone from Jerry the King Lawler, but no. He hides under that ring and makes the fans absolutely irate. I mentioned it earlier. Justin Pratt's podcast with Tim and on the North-South Connection Network. And they mentioned that Lawler, New Gen on a Mission it's called. They mentioned that Lawler was probably the most consistent heel during this era. I never really thought about it, but I think they're right. I think from like 93 to 97, he really is the most consistent heel. Look, this match is a Shawn Michaels show. He's not in it as much as the year before, but he fills every minute with near eliminations and exciting shit. And he's super kicking Diesel out for a win. It's a nice little memorable spot to finish the match. I don't know why Bob Holly's in there for an eternity. I mean, at least the garbage man is like somewhat over, but Holly just kind of walks around. He chokes people with his boot. He stays forever and then he's dumped to no fanfare. Also, at this point, if you have the WWF logo on your gear, you're a jobber. Then, now, forever. I think the best part of the match is the 5-minute stretch with Vader. He just beats the shit out of guys, tosses Owen Hart. He tosses Owen Hart twice, actually, and then has a standoff with Gorilla. I think the worst moment of the match is Doug Gilbert's dance of excitement, which all but guaranteed him a shower with Justin Hawk Bradshaw. 96 Rumble was a weird one, because there's almost no over faces in the ring until Michael shows up. And I'm not sure if it's poor booking or if it's just a sign that there's nobody else at this point. The most over face in the first half of the match is Razor Ramon. He's not even in the match, but it's a fine Rumble. There's just there's nothing super bad. There's nothing earth-shattering or memorable. It screams middle. Historical importance, 5 out of 35. So yeah, this is an important one. It's the debut of Mark Morrow and potentially the first interracial relationship on WWF television at this point. Because Sonny was banging that gladiator, right? And there's no way, I don't think there's any way her small hands could have enveloped that puffed up ass. It's just such a strange costume to put him in. Look, I know this is what you would call a rebuilding year if the WWF is a sports franchise. They're gearing up for a run against WCW. So we're getting the cupboard filled with Mick Foley, Vader, Triple H, of course, Steve Austin. And I don't even talk about the massive happening in November. And no, I'm not talking about Jimmy Snuka disappointing the fan base worse than when he killed that girl. I'm talking about the debut of Rocky Maivia. Imagine your sports team drafting Steve Austin, or stars the star, the quality of Steve Austin, Mick Foley, and The Rock in one year. It's crazy! Also, I think this is the start of the Attitude Era, which will revitalize the company and eventually build the monopoly, which allows them to not be creative to this day. It's hard to pinpoint the start date. You could use the Austin 316 promo with the King of the Ring as a good a place as any, as like an origin. It takes a while to get going, but the anti-hero was conceived that night and would eventually take the wrestling world by storm. Even something like Hall and Nash leaving forced the company to pivot. It really put them on the defensive, and I think that's why they started taking risks, like putting the title on Sid and burying people alive on pay-per-view. The lines were blurred, they started selling sex. It was an incredible time to be watching and influenced the company on a profound level. We don't get to Vince's good guys and bad guys speech without first having like the toughest man in Montreal matches between Austin and Vader at house shows. They're both heels. We needed the Warrior to come back to show us how much he wasn't needed. We needed the white meat babyface at the helm of the company to die, which it did at Madison Square Garden when his mentor was nearly killed and the fans wanted blood. And I am so fucking happy that that no good Pete Lothario got what he was coming to him. SummerSlam, 20th out of 33. So as I mentioned, I kind of returned to the product in the summer of 96. And this was the first pay-per-view I bought upon my return. So regardless of quality, this show's always going to be special for me. Okay, if this show had bombed, I might have been turned off forever. Instead, it's a show I really liked at the time. I must have watched it a bazillion times on tape. The opener is a bit of a drag. Savio Vega actually managed to make an Owen Hart match boring. And how did the official miss that cast? That's some Danny Davis level of incompetence going on. Tag match all about Sunny, and the entire match is all about dropping a poster of her from the rafters. Well, she looked good. I guess the biggest disappointment of the night was Mark Morrow and Goldust. I mean, there's no excuse for two guys that good to have a match this boring. Boiler Room Brawl is stiff. Taker getting turned on by Paul Bearer is crazy. I already talked about the main event and how great it was. So let's talk about Lawler versus Jake. I love that Lawler has the balls to come to the ring in a Ravens jersey in Cleveland a mere few weeks after they lost the team. He does a stand-up routine that doesn't hold up now, but demolished me as a teenager. He pours booze down the alcoholic's mouth, which I was appalled at the time, but no one would do now. This is probably Jake's favorite match of his career, right? He got to play with the snake and get drunk in the ring. I love Mark Henry on commentary being appalled by Lawler's behavior. And I guess it didn't, he didn't help at first because he didn't want to get booze all over the flag he was wearing. How many times did he have to say, that ain't right, before he takes off his Kangol hat and steps up to the king? Oh, and I almost forgot that Lawler won the match. After pouring booze down the guy's throat, he then hits him in the Adam's apple with a bottle and pins him with all of Jake's tights in his hands. I've noticed a trend online lately of shitting on AEW refs for not DQing people. And they may be right. Could we at least acknowledge this is a problem that's been around for much longer than Tony Khan has been running a promotion? Finally, this is the night where Sid becomes the top face in the company. The promo he cuts backstage is the stuff of legend. When I am lying asleep and I hear the voices, they say, Sid, Sid, Sid. They wanted the man back. And the man is here, my friends! The man is here! I love, too, that Doc Hendricks deadpans by saying, now, Sid, you have said on many occasions you are the master and ruler of the world. Then Sid comes to the ring. He's shaking his head. He's hearing the voices. Who would have thought that leaning into his psychopathy would be make him the biggest face in the company? He invents the fist bump. He powerbombs the shit out of David Boy Smith. And he's just ascending to the top of the company. I've never not loved Sid. Remember, I didn't watch 95 Live. I probably wouldn't have loved him then. But I think he, more than anyone else, got me hooked back into this product. The worst show of the year. The Royal Rumble? I don't think this is a horrible show or anything, but I think it's got some warts and nothing truly great to lift it up. The Rumble clocks in at the best match at 3.25, but then there's a big dip to 2.75 with the Smoking Guns fighting the Bonnie Donnas. Triple H fights the Garbage Man in a boring match. Goldust and Ramon doesn't really live up to potential. You also get the strangest pairing that I remember. I didn't even remember this happened. Ahmed Johnson fighting Jeff Jarrett. And the show is really sunk by the WWF title match between The Undertaker and Bret Hart. It's 29 minutes of boredom. Really unacceptable from these two guys. I guess The Undertaker needed Diesel to wake him up. Best show of the year. And it's a shame I can't really talk about the runner-up too much. I don't want the show to trail on. But it was the King of the Ring. King of the Ring 96 may be one of the most important pay-per-views of all time. Obviously you get the promo that launched 1,000 ships. But you also have the emergence of Mankind. The resurgence of The Undertaker. On top of that, a very good match between Davey and Shawn. Excellent show. Probably the second best version of the actual tournament after the first one. Best show of the year, though, for me, is the Survivor Series. As two of the top four matches of the year. Has the arrival of Steve Austin as the main guy, the debut of The Rock, The Undertaker getting dressed up like a goddamn bat. Hell, even the Godwins are in a good match. The good is so good that we forget that Savio Vega led a team against Vader and that Barry Windham was in a WWF ring in 1996 wearing a WWF shirt. Just an excellent, excellent show, top to bottom. If you're going to watch one show from the year, this would be it. And the atmosphere at MSG is crazy. Before we get to the best wrestlers, let's get some comments. Dennis Nunez. 96 is a slightly underrated year in-ring-wise for WWF on pay-per-view, mainly because of Shawn. In Your House, Good Friends, Better Enemies, King of the Ring, SummerSlam, and the Survivor Series are the best shows of the year because the undercards are solid, and 96 Shawn was working his ass off as champ in the main event. Plus, some guy named Steve Austin wrestled Bret at Survivor Series. I think he went on to be some kind of a big deal. 96 was also the year I went to my first live WWF show with In Your House, It's Time. Wow, that's a cool show to be a part of. I was pulling for Bret to win the title that night, to the point where my 9-year-old self held up the foam WWF toy belt to a group of people outside the arena before the show saying, this is going around Bret's waist tonight. After Sid retained, I asked my dad if we could skip the post-show dark matches to go home because I was bummed that Bret lost. Hey, I was 9. Man, that's awesome. I remember my first show. It was Hulk Hogan versus the One Man Gang. And as we left the arena, I told my dad, what if the One Man Gang was all of us inside of him? All humanity. I was 7. Shrug. Jay Hinchy. The year of Shawn Michaels in some excellent matches with Diesel, British Bulldog, Vader, Mankind, and Sid. I know the Iron Man match at WrestleMania 12 has a divided opinion, but I still think it's a good match. Also get the greatest feud of The Undertaker and Mankind, including the Boiler Room Brawl at SummerSlam and the Buried Alive match in October at In Your House. Plus, what a turnaround from Sid from the year before. I'm always amazed whenever I watch 96 back how over he was at that point. You get the rise of Stone Cold Steve Austin, the beginning of the King of the Ring, and the feud with Bret Hart leading to an underrated match from them at the Survivor Series. I don't know if that's underrated, that match. People really love it. But yeah, it's great. The tag division leaves something to be desired, but I think it picks up when Owen and Davey Boy becomes the tag team champions. A couple of debuts from Mark Miro, the aforementioned Vader, and Farouk. Thanks, Jay. Keep them coming, guys. Worst wrestlers of the year, bottom five. So I'd like to, I don't want to add length to the show, but I think it's important to mention how I come to these rankings to contextualize this year, which doesn't have a lot of bad performances. So to qualify for best or worst wrestler of the year, you have to have worked in at least a quarter of the pay-per-views. So in a year like 96, you need to wrestle on three shows. 2019, you need to wrestle on five. The only exception is the two-show years like 85, 86, 87, where I think you need to have two appearances. Next, the people that qualify, I take their average star ratings for all their matches. So they're ranked one to how many people qualified. So for example, in 96, 25 wrestlers and tag teams qualified. Then I give them points for the match ratings in the year. I rank every match against one another for the whole year. So in 96, Michaels Mankind is number one, Warrior Goldust is number 68. 68 total matches on the year. So you get points based on these. So match number one gets 68 points, match number two, 67, et cetera, et cetera. Then there's bonuses applied for four plus star matches. And if they're, depending how long the match is too, they might get more. And penalties for two and a quarter or lower. This gives me two columns. Wrestlers ranked by star ratings and points. Then I add the ratings together and that gives us the ranking. So the guy who won Wrestler of the Year this year finished first in both categories. He gets 1 point for finishing first in star rating, 1 point for finishing first in points. And the lower the points, the better. What it does do in a year where nothing's horrible is it punishes guys who may have had some weaker stuff, but they're ultimately punished for not being around that much. It may seem unfair, but it's kind of the most fair I could try to make it. That being said, because I think if you're on every show and you're a part of the show and some of your matches are bad, I think you need to be bumped up a bit because you're carrying part of the company. Five worst wrestlers of the year. Number five, Yokozuna. By no means horrible, but his size is getting out of control. He's got the fun opener at Mania, the kind of shitty Survivor Series match where he teams with Savio Vega. I say kind of shitty because those matches are really hard to mess up. So if they clock in at 2.5, which it does, it feels like a massive failure. And I think he's got a boring match with Bulldog at Rage in the Cage, a very disappointing match with, for me, Invader at Beware of Dog. And because I think I felt the interactions with them at that point felt like such a Haas opener. Number four, Jerry Lawler. I think his match with Warrior is good. It's got good heat. It doesn't overstay its welcome. His Survivor Series his match is so eclectic. His team, a Blue Bud, a Sexual Deviant, a Criminal, and Goldust. He's also really good in a match like the Survivor Series to draw heat. His feud with Jake and Mark Henry, what sinks him. I don't think Henry, I think the Henry one's on him. But the Jake one is like the Jerry Lawler show. Third worst wrestler of the year, Goldust. How can you be such an important part of the show and finish so low on the list? Goldust is entirely saved by volume here. He's the second worst when it comes to star rage match rating, but he's on a lot of shows. I think he peaks with Mania when he's involved in the hate crime with Roddy Piper, but then he doesn't have a match that cracks three stars. The Ahmed moment is more of a beating than a match. The Razor match felt like an imposition on Razor Ramon. The Mauro and Undertaker series are just not good, and the Ultimate Warrior match is an embarrassment. Number two, Razor Ramon! Man, this guy just didn't give a fuck in 96. Goldust, Kid, and Vader, all underdelivered. I think the worst one was with Vader. Where's all that classic Razor babyface fire? Guy on his way out. Sad way to end his 90s run, because he was a really important part of the mid-90s for the WWF. Worst rest of the year. And it saddens me. Is the Ultimate Warrior. I love the match with Triple H. I like the Lawler match. But man, that Goldust match sucks. I remember being excited when I heard he was coming back. And then disappointed when I started watching again. Then he was gone. That being said, he just doesn't fit in this world anymore. He's a superhero in an era of the wrestler. It just doesn't fit with guys like Bret Hart and Steve Austin. Gods need to fight other gods. And WWF was not the god promotion anymore. Furthermore, I think that 98 showed that the god era in wrestling was dead completely. So as much as I love the Ultimate Warrior, I don't think he can exist outside that cartoon god era. He didn't have the adaptation skills of a Randy Savage or Hulk Hogan. Hell, even The Undertaker showed us he could change and pivot and become a human. And look, if the Ultimate Warrior's path to humanity was through destrucity, well, then it was doomed from the start. If I didn't ding him for the Goldust match and he wouldn't have qualified, if I had to bump someone else up, it would have been Savio Vega and I had to talk about him. No one wants that. Ryan Everett, four words to describe this year. The year of destrucity. Five best wrestlers of the year coming up. Callum McDougall. I want to mention some things first. Because I think there's an interesting theme here. Callum McDougall, what a turnaround for Sid! A channel changer in 1995 for the wrong reasons to a channel changer in 96 for the right reasons. Sid was so good in 96. He just had that intangible this year that not many have ever found. Also, much love for Sean, whose pay-per-view main event matches were all in the good to excellent range and marked a turnaround for the main events in 95. Matt Farrell, Warrior for Sid was a great trade. I agree. So I think it should come as no surprise after what I just said and did that my number five wrestler of the year is Sid. I don't want to talk about him anymore. You know how much I love him. He's the master and ruler of the world. His clothesline looks like he's trying to kill you. He's great. Number four, best wrestler of the year. Bulldog and Owen. I'm going to put them together. Not only because it let me put Sid at number five, but it kind of feels like they have really identical years. They both finished with the same amount of points in my system, so whatever. I don't usually put ties together, but I think this fits. 96 feels like a Bulldog and Owen year. When I think about one, I think about the other. They saved the tag team division. Almost all their matches crack 3 stars. But then they both have very good matches with Shawn Michaels. I think Shawn Owen may be the best of their bunch, but they're all about the same rating. Guys like Owen and Davey in the undercard, you know your promotion's in good shape. It's kind of a misnomer that 1996 WWF was like the inverse of 1996-1997 WCW, where in 97 WCW 1996, the main event sucked, but the undercard was awesome. And the theory goes that in 96 WWF, the main event sucked, but the undercard was awesome. But I don't think that's the undercard was garbage. But I don't think that's really true. And I think a lot of that is in part due to the work of Owen and Davey. Number three. Best wrestler of the year. Stone Cold Steve Austin. This begins the ascent of one, if not the greatest wrestlers of all time. Vince should be forever grateful to Stone Cold for saving his company, despite him taking his ball and going home. Imagine trying to infantilize your top star to that level. Without 1996 Steve Austin, we probably don't have the pushback and the eventual WWF win. The Savio series really isn't inspired, but it's fun. Austin's really great in the Rumble, even though he's in there for a limited time. King of the Ring performance is all-timer. The promo is so famous that we forget he had a very good match with Mark Morrow on the way to the final. It's criminal he's left off SummerSlam, but then he turns around and has an absolute classic with Bret at Survivor Series, which tops out at 4.5 stars. His worst match against Triple H, man, he's even tanking Austin in 96. Amir, 2.75. Really solid foundational year from Stone Cold. Man, that Ringmaster stuff seems stupid in retrospect. Imagine bringing in Ted DiBiase to talk for this guy. Oh, and I know we're not really dealing with TV, but he stood down a man with a gun. Such a shame we never got him and Pillman as a blow-off. Number two, Mankind. He fought 3 people on pay-per-view all year. The Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, and Henry Godwin? Why on earth did he fight Henry Godwin? Anyway, similar to Austin, his worst match clocks in at 2.75 stars. His best match of years with HBK. He's just awesome. He's unique. Right down to using 2 different theme songs for his entrances and exits from the ring. He's able to deliver main event stuff right out of the gate with Taker. I will posit that Mick Foley gets a ton of credit, and rightfully so, for making The Rock, Triple H, Randy Orton, maybe even Austin's early title run in 98. But I don't think he gets nearly enough credit for making The Undertaker interesting. If not for Foley, what is Undertaker doing this year besides going into WCW? Razor and Diesel are gone. He's not fighting Shawn. No way they feed Shawn to him here. They have so little to do with Taker they make him fight with the Intercontinental title. Mankind saved his ass. Best wrestler of the year. It's got to be Shawn Michaels. And I don't want to sound hyperbolic, but of all the championships run we have seen on the year that was so far, I don't think we've dealt with one that has the consistency of Shawn Michaels 1996. He wins the Iron Man match, which I have at 3.25. I know there's some that are even higher on that. He's a 4.5-star classic with Diesel at Good Friends, Better Enemies, 3.25 at Davey, Beware of Dog, 3.5 Davey, King of the Ring, 4 with Vader at SummerSlam, 4.75 at Mankind Mind Games, and finally 4 stars with Sid at Survivor Series. He has 4 of the top 5 matches, 6 of the top 10, 7 if you count the Rumble, which he was a major part of. Man, this for me, it's an all-time year from Michaels. I know he has his critics, but man, it's hard to deny the output here. Whatever turmoil he was going on behind the scenes, it didn't show. I mean, except for the hissy fit with Vader. But fuck, Leon, get in position! Just kidding. Michaels was a dick, and but he had a great year. And it'll be interesting to see going forward if there's a champion who comes close to his output for this year. I'm going to give the final word to Ryan Gray, my buddy. Tag team division? Is it super bad or just bad? I think it's better. It gets a little better at the end. Yeah, he agrees. Gets a little better at the end of the year with Bulldog and Owen. But then again, they wrestled Diesel and Razor Ramon in December 1996. Goldust faced The Undertaker 3 times on pay-per-view this year. That's kind of crazy. Add in Piper, the Backlog Brawl, and the real Razor Ramon and on the Ultimate Warrior. Yeah, he's really got a weird roster of opponents. His best stuff may be Mark Miro, too. Maybe. I don't think so, but possible. Interesting booking for Goldust. And he has a question. Does Mark Muir have a long shot of making the top five best wrestlers of the year? Probably not, but I'm getting 7 to 9-ish vibes from the Wild Man. I'll tell you, Ryan, if you ever want to know, if ever want to know my rankings more than the top five, just let me know and I'll put it somewhere for you guys to read. But I had Mark Muir at 9th, so you're right on board. Ahead of him, so I had Bulldog on at 4. He's 8th, actually. My list is weird because on my list, Owen is 4, Bulldog is 5. So it's Bulldog and Owen at 4, Sid at 5, Diesel at 6, Ahmed at 7, Maro at 9. But there you go. Good call, Ryan. So 96 in the book. Man, so many positives. You'd think it'd be higher, but clearly hurt by the Rumble, WrestleMania, and SummerSlam being a bit subpar and average. Still, 16 out of 36, really good. And if we go back to what JT said at the start, you can still see some of the warts in 95, so which is why it doesn't move up too high. But to give you some context, it finished 12 points out of the 10th position. So, like, 18 to 10 is really close in this list. 12 points is nothing. So if one of those aforementioned shows had been substantially better, it's a top 10 show. As it stands, 96 was a blast to watch, rewatch. Even when I threw in Warrior Goldust to watch it again, like for the podcast, it still felt fun and fresh. So thanks for joining me. The only day I didn't mention was Tuesdays. TNA Never Dies, JT, Jenny Smith, and I love doing that show. And that runs in tandem with the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast with Jacob Williams. Everything you can do to help support the North-South Connection Podcast Network, I really appreciate. You can share our stuff, give us a rating, let us know what you like, let us know what you don't like. But thanks for all the support so far. Next time on The Year That Was, another year that brought me back to wrestling. And I think probably the last great character that the company produced until maybe the recent Roman Reigns stuff. See you then.